This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Cut him every trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
Up day, 98.7, ESPN, DCR, Bob Schusen sitting in for at least two-thirds of DCR. But Chris Canty, kind enough to spend the week with me, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Jeff Saturday joins us coming up top of the next hour to talk some football. There's plenty of football to get to. We'll do some baseball in hour number one, and we will get your telephone calls in. As Chris Canty, a Yankees fan, I'm wondering how much of a sigh of relief you are, again, breathing after last night. Luis Sessa has been traded by the Yankees, maybe to free up some room to under the salary cap, or not the salary cap, but under the luxury tax threshold for the Yankees to possibly add 2.5 games out of a wild card spot. The bullpen gets the job done last night. Roller coaster win against the Rays. And you're sitting here approaching the trade deadline, still with some hope. Maybe they're sending a signal that there are moves on the horizon, or are you not buying any of this?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say good morning. Second of all, I don't know how much relief Yankees fans had last night watching that game, because Chad Green had another meltdown and Zach Britton almost gave up the ghost in that eighth inning after you saw that ground rule double from a Rosarena that scored a run. So I just, it's one of those things that, man, you're holding your breath every time you go through the bullpen just because you don't know whose night it is to have an off night that could potentially cost you an opportunity to win a baseball game. And at this phase of the season, Bob, we don't have the luxury of being able to give away games where we have commanding leads early. Like, one of the Achilles heels from this Yankees team has been that they don't score a lot of runs early. They get behind, and they usually struggle to try to mount any offense and come back. But, I mean, last night, you scored first. You drew first blood. Like, that was an opportunity to try to put that game away. And you just saw, when you looked at your bullpen, man, it doesn't make you feel great. I mean, Jordan Montgomery went out there, he did his job, he gave you five scoreless innings. Like, that's what we've come to expect from Montgomery. Now, you didn't think that it would take 100-plus pitches, but he got the job done. And then once you turn it over to your bullpen, you're expecting those guys to slam the door shut. And right now, they're not doing that job. Like, the Yankees built this team on being able to hit home runs and having a bullpen that can shut the door better than anybody in baseball, and that's not what they're doing. Now, the one thing I will say that's a positive, Loaisiga looked good out of the pen last night, and Chapman looked good out of the pen last night. Now, he had the assist from Greg Allen. That was a great play on that Margot fly ball. But, I mean, Chapman being back to this dominant force and being able to put away guys with his fastball, with his slider, like that's a good sign for the Yankees moving forward. But, I mean, this bullpen is shaky right now. It really is.
Yeah, there's no doubt. They probably right now would almost solely owe to the bullpen not being a wild card team because of some of the unthinkable losses they've had. Here's what drove me crazy about this game last night. And it's not something, because they won the game and you play the result, that's probably going to be a big topic. But Loaisiga last night looked like Loaisiga. He looked like Mariano Rivera when he used to set up for John Wetland. And I heard Paul O'Neill say this. I heard Michael Kay say this. They had the conversation. Loaisiga, seventh inning, looked literally untouchable. And then they flash out to the bullpen, and there's Zach Britton warming up. And it's, why do you even have a manager? Right? Like, why do Yankee fans even go back and forth about whether or not they should fire Aaron Boone at the end of the season? Why? All they're going to do, if they fire Aaron Boone, is get another guy to go in there, open up the analytics binder, and ignore what he sees, pay no attention to what he's actually looking at, and he's just going to go to the next page on the binder and put the next guy in the game, because that's what the binder says to do. Loaisiga needed to be replaced at Fenway Park. When he came in and faced those three batters in a crucible moment of that game and gave up three line drives, he needed to be taken out of that game. They left him in for a fourth hitter, and it cost them. Last night, he did not need to be replaced. If you watched him with your eyes, you were looking at the most dominant reliever, Aroldis Chapman or not, the most dominant reliever and most consistent reliever the Yankees have had this year, right staring at you, throwing the best stuff, as good as he has thrown all year. And what do? They bring Zach Britton in. And what does he just about do? Just about makes them look dumb for that decision. So, again, it's like you don't need a manager. You just need a guy with a binder to sit there back in an office and ring a phone up to the dugout and say, all right, this is the next guy that's in. Well, wait a minute. Did you just watch Jonathan Loaisiga mow down three guys? No, that's not the way this works. This is the next guy in. And, you know, it's baffling to me that we're watching this, right? Like, use your eyes and to just make the push-button move and almost – now, they didn't blow the game, right? Because the bullpen didn't blow the game, mm-hmm. It doesn't become the big topic this morning that if Zach Britton went in there and gave up a three-run home run and they lost, I'm sure Yankee fans would be jamming the phone lines this morning, screaming about it. They'd have every right to. They won the game, so you play the result. But, Chris, why do you even have a manager if you can't leave Jonathan Loaisiga in that game?
Because you want the manager to be able to sell the decision from the front office in the analytics department to the guys that are in the clubhouse. That's why you have a manager. And I know that this is something that drives Yankees fans crazy. They have these lanes for these relievers, and they really don't like to go outside of the box when it comes to the respective roles that they're asking these guys to execute on a night-in, night-out basis. Like, they've shown that they're resistant to putting Loaisiga in this situation, especially of late after he came off an outing where he's struggling. They don't want to ask him to do something outside of what they typically expect from him. So, I understand why they made it, although I don't agree with the decision. But this is just something that Yankees fans had to learn how to live with the last few years as Aaron Boone as the manager. Because Aaron Boone was handpicked by Brian Cashman. You got to think that Aaron Boone is going to do whatever Brian Cashman wants him to do in terms of the roles that they're going to put these guys in and what they're going to ask these guys to do. Like, that's just the bottom line of it. So, I mean, as much as we talk about it, as much as we hate it, they're going to stay with this formula because guess what? Prior to last season, it's a formula that led to back-to-back 100-plus win seasons for Aaron Boone, a guy that's never managed a ball club before. So this is who the Yankees are. This is who they're going to be under Brian Cashman. And sometimes it's going to work out. But this season, more often than not, it hasn't worked out. And so that's left us to question whether or not Aaron Boone is going to be long for the Yankees as their manager.
But before Loaisiga went on the COVID pause, I mean, I'm just looking at his game log. Like, the last eight outings that he had before his COVID pause, four of the eight outings he pitched more than one inning. Like, it's not unusual for him to finish an inning off, pitch an inning, go to the dugout, sit there, and come back in. If there was ever a night that was screaming for him to be more than a one-inning pitcher, it was last night. Now, maybe it's because they finally got Zach Britton back and they want to work him back in. And if you're the Red Sox, you got an 8 or 9 game lead, fine. You have built yourself the cushion where you have earned the right to do whatever you want. You want to work a guy back in. You want to get a guy and maybe your bullpen at some point blows you a game, but there's an idea of I'm going to lose the smaller battle to win the bigger war. That's all well. The Yankees long ago lost that type of, leeway. Right?
Yeah, they don't have that kind of margin.
They have zero margin for error. They need to be managing these games like it's Game 7 of the World Series. And you see a guy that has many times this season given you more than one inning. Look the way he looked last night. Why are you not saying this is the perfect night for him to give us more than one inning? Even if he doesn't get all the way through the eighth inning, let him get us an out or two. Maybe Zach Britton comes in and just goes lefty-lefty to one guy in the eighth inning and tries to end that inning and get it to Aroldis Chapman. So, Jeff Van Gundy said this, And I have always gone back to it when the topic of firing coaches or firing managers in sports comes up. And I think it crystallizes what the fans don't want to hear because they want the sacrificial lamb, but really is true. When organizations fire coaches or fire general managers, they do it more often than not to give the fan base and the media the illusion of change.
Mm-hmm.
Because real change is real hard. Because real change is looking at this $220 million payroll team and saying, you know what? We ain't that good. We got to fire the players. We got to fire Giancarlo Stanton and his $30 million a year salary. We have to fire these guys that we are dramatically overpaying, and we have to change our team. That's not easy. It's way easier to say, you know what? We put together this great team. We just got to get a new manager in here, fire one guy, fire the low-paid guy, fire Aaron Boone, and bring somebody else in. When that next guy that comes in, all he's going to do is push the same buttons that the pencil pushers upstairs want him to push.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you're scapegoating the most expendable part of your organization. That's what moving on from Aaron Boone would be. Now, the Yankees aren't going to do anything in the middle of the season, obviously, and Aaron Boone is in the last year of his contract, so it would make it, you know, a more natural transition to somebody else if Brian Cashman decided that he wanted to go that route. But I don't think that's the fix for what this team has been dealing with the last couple of years. Like, I mean, they weren't great last year. Now, they were able to make the playoffs because it was a COVID-impacted season. You're not playing that many games. And so some of the warts that we're starting to get a long, hard look at, they weren't as apparent. And then you still had the glow of what happened the season prior when you had 100 wins. So, I mean, I just feel like to try to put all of this on Aaron Boone would be misguided. I think it's clearly a flaw in how this roster was constructed. And Brian Cashman's going to have to take a long, hard look at those things in the offseason. But in the short term, you got the trade deadline coming up on Friday, and this team could use some help. I mean, they went out and they got Clay Holmes from the Pirates earlier this week to add to their bullpen. They just dealt Sessa and Wilson. So we'll see what they're in the market for in terms of being able to continue to add to this roster. I still think they need some bullpen help. I wouldn't be mad at them if they went out and they got a position player, somebody that could be a versatile bat in their lineup. And what I mean by a versatile bat, not necessarily a lefty bat, although that would be ideal, but somebody that doesn't have to rely on home runs as much in order to be productive. Somebody that can go from gap to gap, somebody that can be a good situational hitter, somebody more in the mold of what we've seen from DJ LeMahieu, who, by the way, had an awesome opposite field RBI base hit yesterday in that fifth inning to drive in Allen. But somebody that gives you that opportunity to add some more versatility to this lineup. Like, that's what you need. You got too many guys that are home run or strikeout and not a lot in between. And you need to add guys that can put the ball in play, that can force the action, that can put pressure on the defense. The Yankees don't have enough of that in their lineup. So them being able to add that before the deadline, in my opinion, that will be a win.
Yeah, I mean, I know Trey Turner went on the COVID list last night, tested positive for COVID, so he's going to be out for about 10 days. But Javi Baez, I mean, one of those middle infielders to put Gleyber Torres back at his more natural position, I'm all in. I've been saying this for 5 years. To me, you're preaching to the choir, and I am the choir. Be the preacher, because, like, the late 90s, early 2000s Yankees were built on DJ LeMahieu kind of players, not on Giancarlo Stanton kind of players. Why have they overloaded this lineup with so much right-handed power and not understood that when they won 114 games, they didn't have a 50 home run hitter, they didn't have a 40 home run hitter, they didn't have a 30 home run hitter. I think Tino Martinez, if I remember right, might have led that team. He had like 28 home runs. And they won 114 games. So I get the game has changed. You have to change with it. The analytics, the shift, specialists out of the bullpen that come in and throw 100 miles an hour, and every team's got three of them or four of them that are going to come in and, you know, it's hard to be like the gap-to-gap slap hitter in today's baseball. I understand that. But there has to be more of a happy medium between what the Yankees are and what they were when they were a dynasty. I'm 1,000% on board with you. And I don't know. What do you think they'll do? I mean, do you think they're going to go out and push a button for a position player?
I think they will. But it's been clear, like, the Yankees have been operating with this eye on the bottom line and then not wanting to go over the luxury tax threshold. And my thing is, you've already got a top three payroll in baseball. You're already invested heavily in this team and the outcome of this season, I don't understand why you wouldn't go past it. I mean, if that's what it's going to take in order to get this team to a point where you move closer to realizing the expectations that you had coming into this season, then go ahead and do that. Because the window that the Yankees have to be able to compete at this level is starting to close. Like, I remember a few years back, Brian Cashman said he wasn't going to jeopardize championships for one championship. And, you know, you're talking about two or three seasons later, we're still waiting on them to even get to a World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part of it that I don't get. I mean, it just feels like if you're going to do it, you might want to make that decision to go in now with this team. Because, listen, there are a lot of those young guys that we considered baby bombers back in 2015, 2016 that are coming up. You're going to have to pay those guys.
Right.
Like, after 2022, Aaron Judge is in line for a contract. Like, you got to make a decision on what you're going to do. You would like to be able to try to compete for a championship while you still have some control, some team control over what you're paying that guy. Like, I mean, and the same can be said for a lot of other Yankees that are on this roster. So I look at it in terms of this is the time that you push your chips to the middle of the table and you try to go for it. And I will see what Brian Cashman does. But, I mean, if he decides not to make any significant moves, I mean, this could be one of those situations you look back on and you say, what could have been had Brian Cashman decided to go over the luxury tax threshold? Now, I know that that's a Hal Steinbrenner decision more so than a Cashman decision. But, I mean, I just – as a Yankees fan, it's a little bit frustrating knowing where this team is at and knowing the opportunity that is in front of them.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Rothenberg, Rick DiPietro. With the week off, Bob Beschusen sitting in with Chris Canty at 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We got some calls. We'll get to the Mets coming up shortly. We'll do some Jets and Giants coming up as well. Jeff Saturday, top of the next hour. But at 800-919-3776, let's get Nick in Babylon up this morning on DCR on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Nick.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
The Yankees won that game last night, right? Am I correct?
You're right.
They won. All I'm hearing is whining and moaning. I figured they must have lost the way you guys are crying about everything.
Well, I wasn't whining and moaning about – well, first of all, it's if you want to play the result that everything is great every time they win and the only time that there's any issue with any team is when they lose, that's fine. But listen, I was celebrating the performance of – Loaisiga. I was second-guessing, taking a pitcher out. I called him Mariano Rivera setting up for John Wetland. To me, that's what he looked like last night. Why screw with a good thing? That's all I was saying, and it drives me crazy when I'm watching what I know is an analytically driven decision put a game in jeopardy that did not need to be in jeopardy.
The Mets record and the Yankees record is virtually identical. But to hear people talk on these radio stations, you think that the Yankees are a dumpster fire and the Mets are a huge success when they have virtually the same record and the Yankees have a much tougher schedule.
Yeah, but they're not in the same position. That's the part that you seem to be missing. The Mets are in first place in the NL East. The Yankees are in third. And they're 9 games back of the Boston Red Sox. I mean, you closed some ground on Tampa, so that was good to be able to win that game. But, I mean, listen, just because you won that game down in Tampa doesn't erase the stink of losing 3 or 4 up in Fenway Park. You had a chance to put a dent in the Red Sox lead in the division. I mean, the objective is to be able to get into the postseason. And the best opportunity to do that is to not rely on trying to fight for the wild card, but being able to win your division. The Yankees are a long ways off from being able to do that. So for a fan that comes into the year with the expectation that his team is going to compete for a championship, forgive me if I'm a little upset about the Yankees and some of the flaws that we've seen play out this year and the potential bullpen meltdown that we saw last night in Tampa. Like, just because they were able to win the game doesn't mean there weren't some things that we took out of the game that are still concerning.
Yeah, and I would say that the 100-game sample size that we've seen of the Yankees to this point is a bit bigger of an issue than what happened just last night.
Exactly. That's what I don't understand. Like, Do you want some positivity? Yeah, you saw some good things last night. And I'm not, we mentioned all the good things that we were talking about. Like you saw DJ LeMahieu, you saw Greg Allen and Ryan Lamar, two of the young guys step up. Aaron Judge being back in the lineup. Gio Urshela with a huge double last night that scored two runs. Like there were a lot of positive things that you can take out of the game. But there are also some things that you point to and you say, that could be something that catches the Yankees in the end. What was supposed to be the strength of this team coming into the season, the bullpen, all of a sudden now is shaky. Guys are taking turns blowing leads. That's not who they're supposed to be. But that's what's been happening, and you mentioned it. It's a 100-game sample size. At this point, I feel like we need to accept who the Yankees are, which is a team that nobody can trust because you don't know what you're going to get from night to night.
But there's just enough good there to justify a move or two at the deadline, right? Because they're just on the cusp of getting to the postseason and being in a one-game spot where all of a sudden they are basically where they would have been if they would have won 95 games.
But here's the thing, Bob, and you say they've shown just enough to continue to try to invest in this team. I think them making a move at the deadline is a default position that Brian Cashman has to take. Like I just feel like with what they've invested in this team coming into this year, giving DJ LeMahieu the contract, being in year two of Gerrit Cole and the $300+ million that you paid him, knowing what you're paying Stanton, like this team is got a lot of money in payroll. Like they can't afford to punt on this year. They can't afford to be sellers at the deadline. You already got too much invested in this squad. Like you have to continue to go down that road and see it through to the end, which is why I want them to be aggressive before Friday in terms of being able to fortify this roster and add some pieces that could help them make a postseason push.
John Carphone joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. DCR with Bob Schusen and sitting in with Chris Candy. What's up, John?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm never going to advocate for somebody losing their job, but as you mentioned, at the end of the year, I think it's time for a refresh. I think you look at a lot of teams. Boston doesn't have a scary lineup. Tampa, not a scary lineup. The difference is they have better coaching. So I think a new coaching staff with this team could do some damage, but I don't see it happening this year.
Yeah, and I wasn't advocating for that. Like John, I don't know. You may have missed my point. I wasn't advocating for a new manager. I don't think a new manager makes a difference.
Exactly.
Like, you know, what drove me crazy about last night's game, just specifically, I guess, in the silo of looking at the Loaisiga move is, that to me was like crystallizes what Aaron Boone either is or is or isn't allowed to be. I'm watching the game. CeCe, you're watching the game. Did you see Jonathan Loaisiga last night? What is
great.
Aaron Boone watching?
He
I'm sure
great.
Aaron Boone is watching the same thing we're watching, and he either didn't realize that Jonathan Loaisiga was throwing BBs last night with incredible movement. I mean, as Michael Kay said, I think after he struck out his second guy, that's about the filthiest stuff that anybody on the Yankees has. And last night, his filthy stuff was as filthy as I've seen it this season. And he comes out of the game because they flash down to the bullpen, and there's Zach Britton warming up. And Michael, Paul O'Neill had kind of the exasperated, somewhat frustrating conversation of, you know, I know they've got these guys in these roles, and I know it's kind of predetermined, and they want to keep these guys in their certain slots, but are we watching Jonathan Loaisiga right now? So either Aaron Boone didn't see what Loaisiga looked last night, or he is not empowered to say, I'm allowed to stick with that guy. And either of those two things is bad to me.
Bob, about the only thing that I can come up in terms of why Boone pulled Loaisiga after one inning of work while he was dealing, the only thing I can think of is that maybe they looked at it as a confidence-building performance for him coming off of, you know, an outing in Boston where he gave up four earned runs and wasn't able to record an out. Like, I know that sometimes pitchers have those kind of days where they can't get anybody out and it's just one of those things that you got to flush and you reset. But maybe this was Aaron Boone's way of saying, you know what, you got a good inning of work, put that in the bank, let him use that as a building block performance moving forward so he can get his confidence back up. Maybe that might have been the situation, but that to me, that's the only thing that would make sense in terms of why you would pull him and go with Zach Britton, who's shown you that he's been struggling since he's been back with the team.
Yeah, I mean, but what could possibly show more confidence in a player, right, from a manager or from a team to say, you know what, you just stuffed it right down the throat of the top three hitters in their lineup. Go do it to 4, 5, and 6, too. Man, we believe in you. pat him on the back. Say, you know what? You just earned another inning. Go out there and shut the door on this game that we desperately need to win, rather than putting it in harm's way with a guy that when you put him in a couple of days ago was also giving up line drives in Zach Britton. I don't know.
We're not going to come up with any good answers because
we're not.
It's hard to make a bad decision make a lot of sense. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to make sense of something that seemingly is irrational.
Jeff Saturday, top of the hour to talk football. We can talk football with you as well. Did a lot of Jets and Giants yesterday. We will do more today. Bob Wischusen, along with Chris Canty. It is DCR, 98.7 ESPN. Your telephone calls, even more of them coming up at 800-919-3776. And by the way, I know today is normally Stump Rothenberg Day, so I am going to show in many, many ways how inferior I am going to be on this show to Dave Rothenberg. There is never going to be a time, I think, where I probably show more inferiority to Dave Rothenberg than when you start throwing trivia questions at me. Basically, like RJ sent me the email last night, you know, normally we do Stump Rothenberg on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want to do it? You want to do Stump with Wischusen? I'm like, you want to make an idiot out of me? Absolutely.
So, Bob, what you're saying is you don't have a Google Gimp like Rothenberg does.
Oh, is that the way he does it?
Yeah, he's got one that's on a ball and chain in his basement somewhere by his studio. That's how he gets all the answers right.
I got to tell you, like that. That lifts the veil. That's really disappointing. I have always been, listen to you guys, one of those suckers driving around that just thought Rothenberg knew everything. I did not know that there was like a secret. I didn't know he had a trick. I didn't know he had help. All right. You know what? Where are my kids?
Let me stop. I don't want to cast aspersions on Rothenberg.
Oh, no, I'm going to wake a kid up or two and get him down here and get him on the. I'm going to hide them around the corner and get him on the iPad. All right, good. I didn't know I was allowed to have
there
help.
There you go.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Real quick, though, and we've been, you know, kind of babbling on about what we thought of the bullpen moves last night and just kind of the frustration of seeing a Jonathan Loaisiga out there dealing the way that he was dealing, and then to put that game in harm's way by taking probably the best reliever the Yankees have had this season when he was at his best out.
Most consistent.
No question.
Yeah,
let's listen to Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone wanted to, I think, I'm sure he was asked about this after the game. And I guess maybe we should start off bigger picture, and this is appropriate, with the Yankee manager, guys. Cut number one, why he thought that win last night was so important. Here's the Yankee manager.
We really needed it. We need them. Every day is super important, Dan. So you can keep asking me if we lose a tough one. Tomorrow's going to be really important. We won tonight. We got to go get it tomorrow. And these guys are hyper aware of that and locked in on that. The season's really important right now. And we know we've got to play really well to get where we want to go. So we'll enjoy this one for a few minutes. And we got a big one tomorrow.
All right, but now I think and CeCe, you talked about this earlier, the last cut, which is probably the most important, Green, Britton, the bullpen as a whole, how concerned is he with those two guys and how they're pitching right now?
Greeny, I'm confident, will right himself. Got a little bit of a blow here, and obviously he's had a couple of hiccups, but I'm confident that he'll get it rolling again. And then Britt, I feel like, is really close as well. And really, Britt gave up, you know, one solid contact, the Rosarena double, you know, other than that, the chopper. And then he does what he does. He's always one pitch away. And I feel like going back to the Boston outing and now this outing, he's getting closer, and it's just a matter of him continuing to get reps because the stuff is still absolutely there, and he's going to put you on the ground.
All right, Chris Canty, you buying it?
No, I'm not buying it. I don't feel like Zach Britton is close to being the guy that we've seen the last couple of years. No, I don't think that we've seen that version of Zach Britton, and I'm not sure when that guy's going to show up. But, I mean, the overarching issue is that your bullpen is supposed to be able to shorten the game better than anybody else's bullpen around baseball, and they haven't been up to snuff. Now, the starting pitching on the whole for the Yankees has been a bit of a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the offense and the bullpen have underwhelmed. And when you think about the philosophy that this team was constructed with, I mean, how high is the ceiling for this squad if those two areas of your team, that being the bullpen and the offense, continue to struggle? I don't know. I don't think this is a championship-level squad until both of those groups kind of turn it on. So we'll see what happens. But I feel like this Yankees team needs a shot in the arm, and that's why I'm looking for Brian Cashman to be aggressive at the trade deadline, whether it's Trey Turner or Starling Marte, somebody to kind of give this team a little punch in the arm,
yep.
like a shot in the arm. You saw that a little bit with the young guys, Greg Allen and Ryan Lamar, after the All-Star break, and now you just want to kind of try to make another one of those types of moves to kind of push this team to where they need to go.
4 o'clock Friday is the trade deadline. We'll see what they do then. I agree with you. I guess maybe to play devil's advocate, although you and I are on the same page, I understand from Aaron Boone's standpoint and from Brian Cashman's standpoint, them saying, look, to get where we need to go, we can't do it without Britton and Green. Right? At some point, we're going to have to get those guys straightened out in order to be a playoff team, in order to make a run, because I can't just have Loaisiga to Chapman every single day. Right? Like I have to have the other guys that I know I need to be able to count on in that bullpen, and at some point, I have to put them in games where they're going to get back, you know, straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
But juxtapose that with where they're at in the standings right now. As you said, losing 3 out of 4 the way that they did to the Red Sox and the way that they did, you know, the gut punch that they took with the bullpen coughing it up in the Domingo Germán game to close it. Every game right now feels like the last 2 or 3 games of the season with a playoff spot on the line. And that's why when it's a game like last night where Montgomery gives you what he gives you, and now it's a 1 or 2 run game late, and Loaisiga is dealing the way he's dealing. I get that at some point Britton and Green need to get back on the beam in order for you to get where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Last night to me wasn't the spot. Like, that's not the game to try and have them work the kinks out.
No, you're right. They got to find the right place to land that plane. Like, you've got to find a softer spot for Zach Britton or Chad Green to come in and be able to get right. Like, that's not the get right type of situation. So, I mean, I'm with you on that. I'm following you on that. Last night was one of those, we got to have it. I mean, we talked about it coming out of the All-Star break. You had those 8 matchups against the Boston Red Sox, and you had this 3-game set against the Rays to look forward to, 2 teams that you're looking up at in the division standings, and you realize, like, okay, the Yankees have an opportunity to make up significant ground coming right out of the All-Star break, and in the 10 games they've played, this team is 6-4. I mean, that's not exactly burning it down when it comes to trying to eat up the games back that you are in the division standing. So I just, like, this is one of those things, man. I feel like this Yankees team, you know, they've got to do something to try to continue this newfound sense of urgency that they saw when all of the players went out with COVID early on in the second half. They got to do something to try to continue that type of urgency, to play with that kind of energy and enthusiasm if they're going to be able to make a playoff push. Because if they don't, I mean, this thing could be over sooner rather than later.
Jimmy in Staten Island joins us next. DCR, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Jimmy.
Good morning, guys. I really appreciate that last comment because I was going to say, can't we wait for a semi-laugher before these guys get right? The game against Boston, he brings Loaisiga in. He leaves him in way too long. I'm scratching my head wondering what the heck's going on. Last night, I'm saying, oh, my goodness, this guy's on. You got to ride this guy as long as you can, and he brings Britton in. And we all, as Yankee fans, had a feeling something disastrous was going to happen. I can not even count how many times this year that I will say, in spite of the way the Yankees play, Boone is the one making decisions that are actually losing games. That's my opinion. Can we move Stanton down in the lineup? Do we have to have him in the top 4 every single day? Can we bat him somewhere less pressured to get him right? I'm not understanding the Yankees' philosophy right now. They seem to have some dogs, you know, in the show, but they're holding them back. And it's Aaron Boone or it's Cashman, or it's both of them, but this team cannot get right with decision-making that is putting them 2 steps back.
Yeah, but Jimmy, we've been talking about this all... You got it. We've been talking about this all year, Chris, that these decisions are not unilaterally on Aaron Boone.
Not even a little bit. Like, when he pulled Germán in that Red Sox outing, that's not on Aaron Boone. That's on Brian Cashman in the front office, the analytics department. Like, they're telling him, let's not tempt fate. Let's quit while we're ahead. Get him out of there and go to our bullpen. And that happened to be the wrong decision because you saw what happened to Loaisiga shortly thereafter. Last night, another example. Loaisiga gives you a solid inning. He's great. And then you pull him out and you go with Zach Britton, who hasn't been good all year. Like, that's This is what they are. In order to try to avert a disaster, the Yankees end up creating disasters. And unfortunately, based on where they're at this point in the season, they can't afford to be able to open the door for teams to come back in games and potentially be on the losing side of those close ball games late. Like, the Yankees don't have that luxury anymore. So why would you pick that particular spot to try to use that as a get-right opportunity for Zach Britton? Just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We've got some open lines, and Vinny and Seifert joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN on DCR. Hey, Vinny.
Hey, what's going on, brother? Here's a quick statement, man. Early on in the season, you know, we all would say the same thing. Every time watching these Yankee games, it wasn't just a coincidence that they put down every pitch, the pitch count of every pitcher who went in the last, you know, week. They were throwing, let's say, Lecky, 26 pitches, and they assess at 25. This bullpen's been overused. Boone is notorious for doing so. Every year, time and time again, Chad Green around this time, he hits the 50, 60 inning mark, and the wheels fall off. Britton has the injury, so you can't really blame this. But the same with Loaiza. He's throwing BBs, absolute BBs yesterday. The way Boone has processed everything with the game is he was preset before this game started that if Montgomery gave him five, Loaiza was done. He was pitching the sixth. He wasn't going to close the gap, give it to Chapman, et cetera, who's also been shaky. But it just wasn't the time and place for a struggling Chad Green. I'm going to hang up and let you guys talk.
Yeah, and I think we're in agreement that, look, either he's not watching, and we know he's watching, or he's not allowed. Right? Like, these are predetermined decisions that are going to be made. Zach Britton is my eighth inning guy, and that's that, and nothing impacts that, and I don't care. And, you know, or there's, you know, a phone call being made. Hey, tonight Zach Britton is your eighth inning guy, and that's it. No questions asked. I don't care what Loaiza looks like. Make that move. That's what it feels like, right? It feels like Big Brother is telling Aaron Boone, ignore what you're watching. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah, this is not on Aaron Boone. Like, I know everybody's saying, well, Aaron Boone doesn't have a feel for the game, or he's the one that's costing the Yankees opportunities with some of the decisions that he's making. Aaron Boone is not making the decisions. He's not. Aaron Boone is middle management. He's just relaying the message from the front office to the guys in the clubhouse. That is his job. Being able to sell everybody on that team on the decisions that the organization has made in terms of what their roles are going to be on any given night in any given game. That's what it is. If you think that Aaron Boone has more latitude than that, you're kidding yourself. Aaron Boone is not in the situation that Kevin Cash is in Tampa. He's not in the situation that Alex Cora is in Boston. He's not. He doesn't have the autonomy to be able to make those decisions. He doesn't. There are specific lanes. There are specific roles that they have for the guys in the bullpen. And, you know, he's given the numbers every single game, and he's told this is the idea that the front office has based on the matchups with the club that they're going against. And Aaron Boone goes out there and he executes that particular game plan. He's not the one drawing up the game plan. He's not. That's the front office. That's Brian Cashman's staff. That's what's happening. So to sit here and try to blame Aaron Boone for all the things that have gone wrong with this Yankees team all season long, stop it. It's not on Aaron Boone. It's not.
And if they ever made a managerial change, they'd probably just hire another Aaron Boone. Right? It's not all of a sudden they're going to go, you know what, this didn't work with Aaron Boone. Let's just trash the analytics and hire Buck Showalter and let him run everything. Right? Like, they're not doing that. And analytics, to be fair, is something that is used by every team in Major League Baseball, including
analytics
teams this
work.
Year. They're going to win 105, 110 games.
Yeah, analytics work. It's just the application of the numbers, and that's something that the Yankees have struggled with. Now, do you want to put that on Aaron Boone, or you want to put it on the front office? I would put that on the front office. They're the ones that are dictating to Boone on how he should use the analytics based on the roles that they're assigning these players. So, I mean, that's how I see this thing. I don't think this is on Aaron Boone. I mean, and here's the other part about it. If you want to put all of this on Aaron Boone, what's happened the last couple of years, then you also got to give him credit for them winning 100-plus games in his first 2 years.
Yeah, correct.
Did he just all of a sudden forget how to manage? That's the part of it that I have a hard time struggling with when we get these phone calls from Yankees fans that want to be overly critical of the job that Boone has done. This is not him. This is not his doing. He didn't put this roster together. He's not the one that's giving these guys these roles. He's not the one that's saying, oh, Stanton's got a bat in the four hole. He's not doing that. That's not him. That's the front office. So, Yankees fans, you got to make sure that you point your outrage in the right direction. And it's not Aaron Boone.
Matt in Queens has been patient. He can join us next here on DCR 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Matt. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good to have a chance to speak with you. Two quick comments. One, Simone Biles, you know, I have all the respect in the world for her. The woman made a decision that she thinks is best for her and her mental well-being, and I have no problem with that. But I just view the whole episode, I see it as, you know, really, really sad.
It is sad.
That it had to come to that.
Yes. That was the first thing I thought, too.
Okay, thank you. Now, number two, Chris said something about, you know, if you're a Jets fan and you're not optimistic, then what are you doing? Chris, I got all the respect in the world for your opinions, man. You're a top guy, not just in football. But, you know, I'm 65 years old. I've seen every Super Bowl on TV. I had posters of Joe Namath on my wall before they were in the Super Bowl. I saw Ben Davidson break his cheek. Okay? Zach Wilson, they're having a conflict now with their contract. So is Zach Wilson, he's not in with the team now.
He'll be there soon.
Now, I'm not saying that's going to – yeah, I know he's going to be there soon.
Don't worry about it, Matt. He'll be fine.
No, I know, but I'm just saying I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, I'm hopeful. You know, I feel that, you know, they've made some good moves. I feel good about, you know, Joe Douglas. I'm not saying that they're failing right now. But I'm not like this wildly optimistic, like, yeah, we got the coach. Yeah, we got the quarterback. Yeah, we got the left tackle. You know, I'm not all that. I got to see it.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
And Matt, I'm with you on that. When I said optimistic, I didn't say that you couldn't be cautiously optimistic. I think that's where a lot of Jets fans should be, just based on some of the decisions that this organization has made in the last few years. Like, I for the life of me, I will still not understand hiring a coach that was fired in the same coaching cycle. Like, I mean, the Adam Gase hire, like 3 weeks after he was fired by the Miami Dolphins, the Jets were banging down his door to hire him as their head coach. For the life of me, I will not understand that one. And I know that that's going to have some lingering effects in terms of the overall confidence level of the fan base in the organization. But all I was saying was, for the first time in a long time, you're operating like a functional NFL team. I mean, you allowed the general manager to conduct his head coaching search and land on a guy that he feels is right in order to lead his program forward. And then, together, that GM and head coach went out and made a decision about the future of the quarterback position. Moving off of Sam Darnold, trading him down to Carolina, bringing back some draft picks, and then going ahead and using the second overall pick on Zach Wilson. Like, it just feels like, with all of the major decisions that the organization has made this offseason, the brain trust is in lockstep. And it's been a really long time since you've been able to say that about what's been going on in Florham Park.
You know, the moment as a Jet guy, I said to myself, we're moving in the right direction. The moment last year when it became an absolute no-brainer that no matter who fell to them, they were taking an offensive lineman in the first round. Right? And this year when they went up and got Elijah Vera Tucker, again, just cementing the fact that this is a general manager that gets it, that he understands where this organization needs to go. And that is give your franchise quarterback a puncher's chance. Give him a chance. Give him a chance to have some guys blocking for him. And, you know, that to me, now look, I totally understand, a lifelong Jet fan with everything that you've been through, why you want to see it happen before you believe that it's going to happen. No one understands that more than me, as someone that's called every single snap of their games for the last 20 years. But the, as you know, Chris, as you said, like, the early indications at least show you that the mindset, right, the focus, the plan, you know, how you architecturally speaking envision this coming together moving forward is sound as compared to what kind of the haphazard nature of the way that the team's been thrown together for the last 10 years seem to be.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like this is one of those things where Chris Johnson or Woody Johnson are going to overstep. Like, they're going to give Joe Douglas.
They never
Douglas,
did.
They're going to give Joe Douglas. Well, I just felt
they
like.
They never did. They just hired the wrong people.
It felt like Chris Johnson was a little bit too much in the kitchen when it came to trying to figure out the path forward for this team. Because the Adam Gase hire and trying to, you know, not hiring Matt Rhule because you wanted to dictate who was going to be on his coaching staff, like all of that, Like that screams of the owner being a little bit too involved with some of the decisions that you're making in terms of the hierarchy of your organization. Like, if you find a guy that you think is the best head coaching candidate, then why not give him the autonomy to be able to go out and hire his own staff? Like, that's a decision that I will never understand. Saddling Adam Gase with Greg Williams as his defensive coordinator made no sense to me. It didn't. And you saw the disaster that it was. You saw how that thing worked out. Like, it's just like a microcosm of that would be what happened in that Raiders game. Like, that decision. So I'm just, all I'm simply saying is this. It feels like ownership is kind of, if you're saying they were hands off, it feels like they've taken another step back and they're just going to allow Joe Douglas and Rob Saleh to get this thing back on track. And early returns from these two working together have been overwhelmingly positive. Now, I know they haven't played any games yet, but just based on some of the things that they're saying and some of the moves that they've made, I feel like it lends itself to this team taking a huge step forward in 2021.
Why'd you have to bring up the Raider game?
Why? I had to.
Why,
I had
man?
To.
I mean, you and I seem to be getting along. Like, why would you? You know, that was the weirdest sporting event I think I've ever called. Right? Because think about, like, so I'm calling the game. They're going to win. It's a foregone conclusion. There's no way they can lose this game. And then the way that they lose it, as a lifelong Jets guy, I'm calling it with the pain of the loss. While at the same time being acutely aware that like 90% of the people that were listening to me call that game-winning touchdown for the Raiders were cheering the fact that the Raiders won the game as Jet fans because they wanted the Jets to lose every game so they could get Trevor Lawrence.
Yep.
And I knew it. Like in the background, I'm thinking, I am calling this incredibly painful. I can't believe what I just saw. They couldn't possibly lose this game. How did they screw this up touchdown? Knowing that instead of 90% to 100% of Jet fans throwing stuff at the TV, yelling and cursing at their radio,
they're
right
saying
there,
Greg,
ups,
Greg
yeah,
Williams,
they're cheering.
Greg Williams
yes.
saved the season.
Yes, they're, all, yes they're, the they're out there. I could hear them like chest bumping through the radio as I'm calling this play, while at the same time, I'm like, I cannot believe that now I have to interview people after this game's over and talk about the fact that it's an incredible, mind-numbing loss. That was like the weirdest game I think I've ever called because you could feel the competing emotions of Jet fans during all that.
Oh, we got to play the call. Do we have that call?
No, right? We don't need to play the call.
We got to have that
seconds
call.
To go. The Raiders have to have a touchdown.
Really?
They are out of timeouts.
I have to reload this.
Takes the snap. Here comes an all-out blitz. Steps up in the pocket. Unloads one down the left sideline. Looking for runs. Drops it in. Touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And you know what? And if there was a cartoon bubble coming out of my head, did you hear me say right in the middle of the call, here comes an all-out blitz?
Yes.
And the cartoon bubble coming out of my head was, why is there an all-out blitz? Like, why? Here comes an all-out blitz. Why are they doing that? And we saw the end result of an all-out blitz on what was, at that point, like a Hail Mary, right? I mean, yep. What are we doing? And then, of course, the defense coordinator gets fired, and they lost the game, and Jet fans are chest bumping, and I have to, you know, call this game-winning touchdown. And then, ultimately, they didn't get Trevor Lawrence.
And that's the worst part about that loss.
Yeah.
It didn't result in you ending and getting the best prize in the draft, which was a generational talent in Trevor. But I'll say this. I think from a physical attribute standpoint, like the Jets fans will be pleasantly surprised from what they see from Zach Wilson because the guy can throw a football through a brick wall. He's got an absolute howitzer attached to his shoulder.
I can't wait to see it. He could throw it through a car wash and it won't get wet. Like he's got that. You know, I think you're right. I mean, look, all you can do is watch the tape and see that he has all the tools. But we have seen guys with all the tools here before. Jet fans, I understand why they are skeptical.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.